This is Focus 580. It's our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning. We're also pleased to welcome back to the show Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. Generally, he's here with us four times a year. We ask him to come every season and take your questions about car problems. And it's a very simple proposition. All you have to do is call us. Tell us about the car, the make and the model, and give us the best description that you can of the problem. And I know that he will try and do diagnosis. And all you need to do is pick up the telephone and call. Now, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So, again, 333-WILL, that's for Champaign-Urbana folks, and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Well, thanks very much for being here once again.
Good morning.
I don't want to get too much into this tire and the tire controversy that's raging right at the moment. And certainly I don't want to get into talk about any specific brands of tires. But I guess I have a question about inflation and just how critical it is to make sure that your tires are properly inflated and whether, particularly if they're underinflated, that there's the potential there for having problems.
Right. Very much so. The underinflated tire is going to generate more heat. And obviously that's stressful to the tire. As far as the proper inflation is concerned, the best place to look is actually on the side wall of the tire. Typically, after a car's had some age to it and tires have been replaced, they may not be the exact type of tire that was on the vehicle in the beginning when it was manufactured, and the pressures may deviate. So if you're looking in the owner's manual and the tires have been changed, it'd probably be a good idea to read the side wall of the tire. It'll say maximum inflation pressure. And that is the maximum pressure cold. And usually I usually try to stay within about 4 pounds of that. So in other words, set the tire about 4 pounds less than the maximum. And rotation of tires is important. Typically the prominent wear on tires occurs on the front of the vehicle. And if you notice the outside edges are a little bit smooth or rounded a little bit more, it's time to rotate tires. Hmm. And rotation of tires is simply to take the tires from the right. If we're doing the right side of the car or the passenger side of the car, you just take the front tire and put it on the back and put the back tire on the front. And tire pressure also affects wear of the tire. If it's overinflated, you'll get prominent wear in the center. And underinflation will create wear on the outside edges of the tire. So it's very important. Hmm.
If you have, and a lot of people now are driving these big vehicles, sport utilities and so forth, some of them do have pretty high centers of gravity. If you have a tire that's underinflated, does that make the vehicle any less stable?
Oh, yes. It's not going to be nearly as stable because when a tire is underinflated, if you kind of think about the tire in respect to its sidewall stiffness, which is the horizontal part of the tire in contact with the road there. And if it's underinflated, the car will actually kind of move on its own left and right in a corner because the sidewalls of the tire will actually flex more. Yeah. And every time it does that, of course, it generates heat. And that, of course, breaks down the construction of the tire and shortens its life.
Okay. So that's something to pay attention to. We have a couple of callers here ready to go, and if you have questions for Rick, you can just give us a call, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Both callers are in Urbana. We'll start with line one.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question about my 88 Honda Accord. When I first started and back out of my drive, it revs very high and will continue doing that for some time. And it does that whether the car is warm or not. What could that be?
Well, when you say high, when you look at the tachometer, the...
Yeah, it's around 2,000.
2,000?
Yeah. And, you know, it sounds like the gas pedal is stuck, but I kicked the gas pedal and nothing happened.
Right.
And it doesn't happen all the time. It just happens occasionally. So.
Is that, that should be fuel injected, do you
yes,
think?
It is.
Yeah. There is a idle air control motor which is designed to control the idle speed, and its position changes with temperature. And, of course, when it's cold, it's supposed to be open. 2,000 is a little high. Is it an automatic or a manual?
Manual.
Manual transmission. Yeah, I'd say that's a little too high.
Yeah, and I had it tuned up, thinking that might correct it.
No, it won't.
Yeah, okay.
So they need to take a look at the idle air control circuit.
Okay. That doesn't mean my clutch is going out, does it?
No.
Okay.
No. No, your clutch is not going to affect the idle speed.
Okay. So, have the idle...
air control circuit checked.
Idle air... Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Very good. To somebody else here, right here on line number 2, also in Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I got a 87 Buick Century 4-cylinder. And what it's doing is after it warms up, I guess, 5 to 50 minutes of driving, it kind of hesitates, sputters, and kind of backfires. If you barely touch the accelerator, it'll be fine. And then as you press it down more and more, it starts to kind of hesitate or sputter. And then if you press it even farther down, it'll kind of sounds like it misses and it kind of pops or backfires out the back. Took it into one shop to have it looked at, and he couldn't figure it out. He tested the compression and said it was okay, and he tested the, gasoline pressure or something like that, fuel pressure, and said that was fine. I was wondering if you have any ideas what that might be.
It's when it backfires, and if you let up on the gas a little bit and then accelerate again, does it seem a little better?
No, it just repeats it. Also, I forgot to mention, if you at a stop sign or stoplight and have the brake depressed, it'll stall out. If you leave it in neutral, it'll idle, but if you just try to leave it in gear, it stalls. No difference. It just consistently does that. If anything, it seems to get a little worse as the engine gets warmer.
Right.
That could be just me.
Well,
as I drive down the road.
Right. Yeah. Typically, when you first start the car, it's going to be running a little bit richer. It's going to be delivering a little bit more fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the engine warms up, the computer will adjust the fuel mixture. Is the check engine light on or anything?
No. Okay. I mean, we've had it come on before when nothing was apparently wrong.
Right.
But that was months ago,
mm-hmm.
or probably a year ago, or at least two. But no, the check engine light is fine.
Okay. Probably one of the first things to look at would be the quality of the spray pattern of the injector.
Okay.
And that's right underneath that round black lid with the wing nut on the top there.
Okay.
And you could just take a flashlight while it's idling and look at that spray pattern. It should have a good, even, conical spray pattern.
Okay, and that's under the...
Air cleaner lid.
Yeah.
You can just remove that top, and you'll be able to see it.
Okay.
And then I would kind of listen around to see if you hear any kind of hissing noise,
mm-hmm.
which would indicate a vacuum leak. It sounds like it's too lean.
Okay.
Like it's not getting enough fuel.
Right.
But if they check fuel pressure, how old's the fuel filter?
That I don't know. It could be that. We were wondering. I don't think we've replaced it any time, too.
Right.
Anytime soon. I mean.
Yeah, you've got all the symptoms of lack of fuel pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And too lean, maybe.
Okay.
So I would suggest look at the injector spray pattern
and
then the fuel filter.
And then check fuel filter.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, thanks much.
You're welcome.
Uh-huh.
How often should you change the fuel filter?
Usually every 15,000 miles.
Okay.
And then use the fuel injector cleaner 4 times a year. Which is kind of preventative maintenance. And by fuel injector cleaner, I'm talking about the kind you would acquire at a parts store that you simply dump in the gas tank, and you just add to the gas tank before you fill it. If you buy the top-of-the-line fuel, the 93-octane fuels, those already have injector cleaner in them.
Hmm.
But there's really no reason to spend that kind of money to fill up the gas tank with 93-octane because the fuel injector cleaner is obviously less.
Okay, and there are several brands of this. Doesn't matter what.
No, not really. Just make sure it says fuel injector cleaner. There are products out there, that are just designed for carburetors. So you want to make sure if you have a fuel injected vehicle that it says fuel injector cleaner on the container.
Okay. We have somebody here on a cell phone, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have two things, if you don't mind. One, I've got a 94 Saturn station wagon, and lately the transmission, when you put it in gear and accelerate, the engine seems to race, and then the transmission seems to grab and take hold all at once. It'll also do the same thing on the road if you're traveling and, you know, give it an accelerate to pass a vehicle or something. And I'm wondering how serious that sounds to you.
We're talking about an automatic now?
Right, an automatic.
Okay. Have you checked the fluid level?
Yes, and it's full.
Okay. Does it look red or is there...
Yeah, it looks fine.
It looks fine? Well, if it's slipping, which is what it sounds like it's doing, that would be an internal problem.
Okay. So, all right, so you need the transmission checked out.
Correct.
Okay. The other thing, I have an 89 Camry that just turned 200,000 miles on it. The car's integrity is good. It's got a few little rust spots on the body. The engine runs fine. It still gets good mileage. I just put about $300 into it on some maintenance and found out that the flywheel needs to be replaced. They were hoping it might just be the starter, but the flywheel needs to be replaced, which is going to be close to $700 was the estimate. If I do that, I'm still going to have a car that's 12 years old and has over 200,000 miles. Does that sound like a good investment to you?
So intermittently the car won't start, the starter will just spin?
Yeah, it just makes that really obnoxious grinding noise.
Right. Sometimes if you just, instead of holding it in the crank position, just kind of turn it to that position for just a second and let go, and sometimes the starter will engage and it'll turn the flywheel just a little bit. See, the flywheel always stops in the same series of areas. So the wear on the flywheel and the contact between the flywheel and the starter will always be in the same place. So sometimes if you just bump it a little bit, then it'll always start for you. As far as the flywheel is concerned, you know, that's, I guess, something that you would have to decide if that's, you know, economically feasible. I mean, obviously, that vehicle, if you were to trade it in or try to even sell it in the newspaper, you're not going to get too much for it, and it sounds like it's been very dependable.
Yeah, it has been. So I'm leaning towards doing it.
So. Right. So I'd be inclined to say that it'd probably be a worthwhile investment.
All righty. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. Our guest here this morning on Focus 580 is Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. He's generally with us four times a year, and we encourage you to take the opportunity to call in and talk about your cars. If you have some kind of problem, you can call in and tell us about it, and Rick will see if he can figure out where to look for a solution. 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. I would just, not very long ago, came across an article about just how few cars now are sold with manual transmissions.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very small
right.
percentage. And it talked about the fact that now automatic transmissions, the way they work, have been improved so that some of the old arguments in favor of the manuals, that is, maybe you got better gas mileage, that is, you could figure out better where to shift than where the transmission was figuring out how mm-hmm. to shift. And I know there are probably still a lot of people who have real strong feelings about manual transmission. I had a colleague years back who said that if you had an automatic transmission, he said, that's not driving, that's just steering. is there still much reason, you think, to, unless you just really like shifting, to have a manual transmission?
No, not really. Typically, it's about an additional $1,000 if you were to purchase it new to go to an automatic over mm-hmm. a manual. And when you consider if you're going to keep the vehicle and the cost to replace a clutch, that it's probably a good investment. And I think it significantly helps resale, too. Now, obviously, if you have a sports car, you're not going to want an automatic transmission in there. But
yeah.
But as far as a typical vehicle is concerned, even if you get a very basic one without power windows or power door locks, I think the automatic is the best way to go.
Yeah, I suppose what's going to happen is that if we have fewer cars that have manual transmissions, we'll have fewer people who know how to drive a car with a clutch, and then there'll be people. Yeah, then as you say, if somebody thinking about buying your car, they might look at that stick and that clutch and say, well, I don't know how to drive that.
Correct.
And so we'll just pass that one by.
Correct.
Huh. And the automatic transmissions now, they're pretty good?
Yes, they are. Yeah, they sure are. They do require maintenance. You know, changing the fluid is recommended. But other than that, most of them all today are computerized. Computer controls the shift points. Some of them even adjust the shift points to your driving characteristics. So they're really quite sophisticated. Hmm. And consequently, when there's problems, it gets kind of expensive.
Okay. We have other callers getting lined up here. We'll start back in again. Champagne. And this is line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I was curious. I have a 87 Honda Accord with 180,000 miles on it, and I just love the car. And it's developed an oil leak to where I have to add about a half a quart a month. But other than that, the car's in great shape. But the engine is so dirty, I'm having a hard time figuring out where the oil's leaking from.
Right.
Can you give me any advice on how to track that down or how to clean the engine?
I guess the best thing to do is try to determine if it's leaking toward the flywheel end, which is the area where the transmission bolts to the engine,
mm-hmm.
or if it's on the far left side where all the belts are.
Okay.
Will it actually drip?
I haven't been able to. I park in roughly the same spot, but it's on dirt, and I really don't see. There was quite a big oil spot there before I got there, and I don't really see any new things when mm-hmm. I go out in the morning. But it doesn't seem like I'm burning oil necessarily, because
right.
wouldn't that give a blue exhaust?
Exactly. Is there any funny smell?
Yeah, when I stop, you can see a light smoke. Every once in a while, not always, but when I've been driving for a while,
mm-hmm.
you'll see a light smoke kind of rise up off the hood.
Right. Well, it's very possible it's a valve cover gasket then. The valve cover gasket is the uppermost gasket, and when it does leak on the front side of the engine, that's where the exhaust manifold is,
uh-huh.
and it will give a smoke as well as an odor. Probably the best thing to do is just take it down to the car wash
uh-huh.
and pressure wash it under the hood. Just make sure you don't spray directly at the distributor cap, which is where all the spark plug wires end up.
Okay.
Just don't spray on that. You might even take a little plastic bag with you and just cover that.
Cover the distributor cap.
Right.
And then I can shoot down the whole front of the engine.
Right. But just make sure you stay away from that distributor cap area, because if you get water in there and you get ready to leave, it's not going to run properly, and then you're going to have to remove the distributor cap and dry it out.
Okay.
But more than likely, it's that valve cover gasket.
Uh-huh. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
All right. Very good. Let's go next to a caller in Sullivan. This is line two. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about the service engine light. What all is indicated by that light? I have two vehicles, and I get an intermittent light, and oil level's okay, water's okay.
Right. That light is kind of a misnomer. That's why it's yellow in color and not red.
Mm-hmm.
Yellow is kind of like caution. Red, of course, is... like if the oil light comes on, you're supposed to stop the vehicle. The yellow light, service engine soon, or check engine light, however you want to refer to it, is a light that comes on when the computer detects that one of the different sensors that it's looking at is not sending it the right information.
Mm-hmm.
The information that it's receiving may be outside of its parameters or operating window that it expects to see. The value may be too high, it may be too low. But that's all it is. It's an indication that the computer has seen a sensor that's not sending the right information. Now, if it's intermittent coming on and off, that will be retained in memory of the computer, and it can be accessed with what we refer to as a scan tool,
mm-hmm.
where we can plug in and we can retrieve that information.
Okay.
Does it come on the highway?
Yes.
Okay.
Most of the time.
Most of the time. It's mm-hmm. more than likely it has to do with the oxygen sensor circuit. Is your mileage deteriorated a little bit?
What?
Fuel mileage? How's fuel mileage?
Oh, not noticeably.
No? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, it could be a problem with the EGR, which is an emission exhaust gas recirculation.
Okay.
But it doesn't affect the way it runs when the light comes on?
No.
Okay. It's probably one of those two.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. We have a couple other people here. We're going to get to them in just a second. Of course, we'll continue to talk with our guest, Rick Karch. We're about midway through this part of Focus 580. What we want to do, though, is take just a moment here to give you an opportunity to hear from our station manager, Dan Simeone. This is a very important time for us here at WILL because we are getting ready to start our new fiscal year. That's July 1st. And the reason that's important is because we start a new budget cycle. And right now what we're doing is we're working on raising the money that's going to pay for everything next year. We're getting real close to our fundraising goal for the year. We have a little bit more to do. And so we're asking people, if you haven't yet made a contribution, this would be a great time to do it sometime in the next couple of days.
That's right. June 30th is just around the corner, just a few days away. And we have come a long way this year. And I want to first thank everyone that's contributed, because you've helped us raise more than $626,000 already this year, and that's terrific. We are actually approaching a new record in listener support for our stations. Last year, you helped us raise $660,000, so that's not all that far away. We do need your help soon, however, if you can help us yet this fiscal year. You've helped us assemble a staff of experienced professionals, people like David. We're very, very proud of the staff we have here at WILL. We know you are, too. But we also need your help to preserve and protect that resource. 40% of our budget, more than 40%, comes directly from listeners. So if you can add an additional gift, if you've already contributed this year, or if you've never contributed before, call us right now with a contribution. The number is 217-333-0850. Or you can still mail a check to the Friends of WILL Radio, 300 North Goodwin, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. Thanks very much.
And thank you, Dan. This is Focus 580, our telephone talk program, and we're talking this morning about cars. Rick Karch is here from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. He's good enough to come over here and do the show with us every season. So four times a year he's here. And the deal is, if you're having some car trouble and you need some advice, call in and tell us about it, and Rick will see if he can do some diagnosis here over the phone. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Next up is Champaign, line 3. Hello.
Hello. Could you tell me exactly what a tune-up is and how often you need to do it?
Well, what kind of vehicle do you have?
A 1990 Mercury Sable.
Okay, as far as a tune-up is concerned, it's kind of a misnomer today. It typically involves replacing spark plugs, a fuel filter, take a look at the air filter, and take a look at distributor cap and rotor. If you have a problem with your vehicle, it's not running properly, and you kind of think or assume maybe that a tune-up's going to fix it, more than likely it won't. So as far as when to do it, usually you need to have those components looked at every 15,000 miles.
Okay. What was that last thing? Distributor what?
The
last thing you mentioned was a distributor?
Distributor cap and rotor.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thanks. And in addition to that, now, a lot of cars do, it may be a significant mileage, but they, and your owner's manual will say maybe at 30,000 miles or at 60,000 miles or at 70,000 miles, they may have a list, and it could be considerable, of things that they think should be serviced or replaced.
Correct.
And it's probably a good thing to follow those recommendations, because particularly you're talking about things like timing belts, then you don't want to lose that.
Correct.
When you're driving. That's going to be a big trouble.
Yes. Well, It varies significantly on the year of the vehicle. In her case, 1990, did not have the platinum-type spark plugs in it, which are usually good for 60 or some of them even 90 to 100,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you're exactly right. You need to look at the manual. It will pretty much spell it out for you. And typically the services are every 15,000. Of course, the oil changes fall in between. But
yeah.
So you'd have a service at 15, 30, 45, 60, 75, 90.
Okay.
Those increments.
And you're recommending oil change about every 3, 4,000 miles?
3 months, 3,000 miles is the general recommendation.
Okay.
Right.
On to Urbana, line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My Oldsmobile, which is an 89 car, was giving the signal to service engine soon, so I took it into to a place, and they said that their diagnostics showed that it was a faulty EGR valve. And we talked about that for a bit, and I haven't noticed anything about the car, about its performance, except that you probably have to crank it a couple of times to get it to start instead of taking off and starting right away. And it was pretty expensive, around $500, and I've decided for the time being not to do anything about that. Would you comment on that, please?
Sure. Did they explain to you, or do you understand what EGR is?
No.
Okay. It stands for exhaust gas recirculation.
Uh-huh.
And that valve, when open, recirculates exhaust gases back through the engine. About 7 to 10% of the total exhaust is recirculated. And what that does is it helps reduce combustion temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
And by reducing combustion temperatures, we minimize one of the pollutants that can come out the exhaust pipe called oxides of nitrogen.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it only happens at cruise speeds when the engine is warmed up.
I see.
It doesn't happen at idle. It doesn't happen at full throttle. It's only at a cruising speed. And that's why you haven't noticed any difference
mm-hmm.
in the way it runs.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the valve is concerned, typically it's controlled by a solenoid.
Yeah, I see that here. Uh-huh.
Right. So as far as the valve is concerned, as long as it's not, I think in the 89 it was the older valve and it didn't have any electric solenoid or actuator on the top of it.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, that typically what happens to those valves is the diaphragm may rupture.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing that can happen when a car gets some age on it, and this may be part of your problem, is that when the EGR valve actually does open, the passageways that the exhaust gases are supposed to flow through are all plugged up.
Uh-huh.
So putting parts on there won't fix that case.
Mm.
You're going to have to clean the passageways. And
I see.
It's usually a real simple test. Just simply open the EGR valve while it's idling.
Uh-huh.
And the idle speed should drop and become very rough, and it may even, in fact, die.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the easiest way to check the passageways.
I see.
So,
does about $500 sound like the right...
Well, I don't know. That seems kind of high to me. I mean, I don't know exactly what it needs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, suppose I don't do it, anything. Suppose I just don't have it fixed.
It's probably not going to hurt too much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
It may affect the longevity of the engine a little bit as far as the valves are concerned because the temperatures will be a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
But,
What I mainly is concerned about is getting stuck someplace and not being able to start the car.
No, that will not happen.
The car stopping on the highway.
No, that will not happen.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, the only way that can happen is if that valve sticks open.
I see. Yeah.
But that's just going to make it idle rough and maybe even die, but you'll still be able to drive it.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess as a good citizen, I ought to fix it to help the...
emissions.
Right.
That's correct.
But I may trim my citizenship for a while and hang on with the one we got.
Well, maybe you can try to get a little more information as far as...
Yeah.
Where the costs are involved, because, yes, that does sound kind of high.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, very good. Next caller is in Champaign County, and line number 4. Hello?
Yeah, I have a very specific question, but I wanted to make a general question about the manual versus standard. I guess that's wrong. Manual versus automatic. The truism is that you can use a manual transmission with a smaller engine. Is that not the case anymore, that the automatic transmissions are... minor tuned or something?
Yes, they definitely are.
Mm.
As far as of course, they can adjust the shift points, the ratios, all that can be dealt with. So.
I was told the 2-liter engine that I have would not work well with an automatic transmission, but with a manual, it's fine. You can downshift when you need to and
right.
That sort of thing. Anyway, I don't know if you have any more general, but I have a very specific thing about a starter relay. It's actually called a run start relay. This is an old Chrysler product that I don't want to spend a lot of money on. I've looked at the circuitry, and it's the relay has got a diode in parallel to a switch. I assume that's to save the switch, right, to stop it from. I'm not sure what it does, because there's a starter relay and then there's a run start relay, and I have a feeling maybe it's supposed to stop you from, you know, keeping your starter on too long or something like that. Or
no, was this? You said it was on a Chrysler.
Yeah, well, Dodge, Chrysler product, Mopar or whatever.
Okay.
There's like three relays there, and
what year
I can still. This is an '87 Dodge Caravan. I can still start it, but I have to go under the hood and, you know, jump the right wires.
Oh, you're talking about that silver relay that's got like five wires going to it?
Yeah, there's three relays in a row.
Right.
On the firewall, and I thought it was the simple starter relay, and it's not. It seems to be this other one. And I noticed it has a Zener in it, which is, I thought it might, well, that would be a capacitor, though, but.
Well, what does the car do? It just clicks?
No, it doesn't do anything at all unless you know where to jump the right leads.
Well, probably the first thing to do would be go right on down to the starter with a voltmeter or a test light on that small wire.
Well, I mean, it starts fine if you know how to do it. That's just you can't, the whole thing is that that's a dealer part, and it's more than money than I like to pay for right. This thing right now. I'm wondering whether I can just clean the points on the relay and maybe even replace a diode if I can figure out what specs the diode needs. And
well, I don't.
It's a little closer than most people want to work with a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I think I would start down at the starter, try to work your way back, because it may not be that relay.
Mm.
It may be the solenoid on the starter.
No, well, like I said, I can start it if I want to. I just have to go to the other relay and fake a connection with a wire or so. And I was thinking about actually putting a regular switch through the firewall and, you know, run some leads and just have an old foot start vehicle. But I'm just wondering whether I could get into some other kind of trouble if the thing is doing something else, like sending a signal to the computer or something like that, because there is a rudimentary computer even on a car.
Well, that relay that you're referring to is not that expensive, if that is in fact the problem. You know, you'd have to check the inputs to it to make sure that the park neutral safety switch is working properly. You know, maybe there's a problem there.
Well, this is a manual.
Manual?
So there's no park neutral.
You have to have the clutch depressed pedal?
I don't think actually they had it at that level.
Okay.
This is a very simple relay, I mean.
Right. Well, the best thing to do is look at the diagram and check its inputs and then verify that the inputs are good, and then you can check the outputs. And if the inputs are good and the outputs are bad, then obviously it's the relay that's at fault. But I think I would do that much sooner than running wires and. You know.
Well, I sort of made a vow that if I keep this, I wouldn't spend a lot of money on it.
Right. Well,
just trying to be overly frugal. So, anyway, I was just curious about what the diode actually did in this relay. It protects the points. Is that what?
Well, usually the diode is in there to prevent current from going the opposite direction.
Well, I think it's a Zener, though, and it actually allows a certain current over the switch, but conducts the other sort of thing.
Well, I'd have to look at a wiring diagram, but.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. I thought it was too specific. If you had anything more about any thoughts about the manual versus automatic, I think that there is this thing about being underpowered and you can get away with a smaller engine. With a manual.
Well, that's true.
Maybe not. All right, thanks.
Okay,
thank you. We have about 10 minutes left, 10, 12 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with auto mechanic Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. And this is your opportunity to call in and discuss your car problems with us, 333-9455. And we also have that toll-free line. That means if it would be long-distance call for you, you can use that number and we'll pay for the call, 800-222-9455. And back here to Champaign. Line one. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got a problem in my car where it kind of shakes or vibrates when I come to a stop. Just wondering if you have any idea what that might be. Like the steering wheel will vibrate.
Yeah.
I just wonder, is that like maybe the U-joints or something?
No. It's going to have something to do with the fact that it may not be running very smooth. There may be a Is it a four-cylinder or six-cylinder?
Yeah, it's a four-cylinder. I mean, I haven't had it tuned up for a while. Just wondering if that might be, or something with the engine.
Well, it's something that you need to have looked at. What is it? It'll real rough, and you have to put it in neutral, or do you have to step on the gas
a little bit?
It's
an 89 Honda. It's always run really good. I've never really had to do hardly any maintenance on it, less than probably I should.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just noticed the shaking problem. I just wonder if it's something that's I should be real concerned about, or if you have any idea.
Well,
or I just need to have it looked at.
Yeah, I would have it taken a look at and try to isolate if it's just maybe dirty injectors or maybe an engine mount or maybe it's not running on four cylinders.
So it could be a lot of things.
Yes, it can.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Sure.
All right, thank you. Next is Urbana, line two. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Mm-hmm. I'm having a strange electrical system problem. What happens is that when I use the right turn signal, the light will light but not blink, and at the same time, the brake lights won't work. And sometimes I don't even have to be touching the brake. If I just simply put the right turn signal on, the brake light out message on my little console comes on. And the middle brake light, you know, kind of inside at the back window, isn't working. But this had only been happening sometimes when it was raining really, really hard or really humid. And so we took it in and they cleaned the corrosion out of the bulb sockets. And now it happens generally at the end of about a 20, 30-minute drive. But we can't recreate it. And can we do anything besides cleaning the corrosion out of the bulb sockets, or what can we start to think about?
Well, probably, what year is the car?
It's a 90. It's a 90 LeBaron.
Okay. Probably what I would do at night, start the vehicle up and turn the headlights on and go around to the back and kind of look at the illumination of the bulbs and kind of compare all the bulbs as far as brightness is concerned and then put the turn signals on and see if not only the turn signal bulb is flashing but maybe one of the others is dimming a little bit.
And so like the left turn signal would be dimming?
The left turn signal would function properly, but the left taillight might dim a little bit and get brighter.
Okay.
And that's an indication of a bad ground, which
okay.
It kind of sounds like. Now, as far as the right side is concerned, if the light goes on the dash but it doesn't flash, that usually means a bulb is out.
Okay, but it actually does flash. It actually is, the light actually does work.
Okay. Does it flash faster than the left side?
When it does flash?
Yes.
No, same.
Same speed?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, the best thing to do when it does that is put on the right turn signal and get out of the car and see which end of the car is not illuminated.
Okay.
And that's when you're probably going to find maybe it is a case where the bulb needs to just, sometimes if you just tap on the lens, just a loose contact. But a lot of cars lately have been seeing a lot of ground problems.
Okay. All right, I'll have that checked out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Let's go next to Kankakee, line number three. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
My grandparents have a car that gets about 3,000 miles use a year. How often should we be changing the oil on that?
The use that it gets, is it like?
It's a combination of short trips plus a few long trips.
Okay.
And the car is fairly new, about a year and a half old.
Yes, I would change it once a year then.
Once a year.
Right.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And another caller right here, Muhammad, line number four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm having trouble with my air conditioner in a Crown Victoria 1990 age, and the air conditioning just got weaker and weaker until now it's not doing anything. I suspect I need a shot of refrigerant.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's low. It's low on Freon. It has a leak.
Yeah, okay.
And it's probably all the O-rings, particularly up by the condenser. There's a series of O-rings.
Oh.
And usually, do you know what the air conditioning lines look like?
Yes.
Okay. If you just kind of look at them closely, you'll probably see at each of the connections looks like an oil film with dust in that area. And that is an indication because there's oil in suspension in the air conditioning system. And when it leaks, it gets outside, the dirt and the dust is attracted to that, and it sticks.
Okay. Now, is that giving it a refrigerant boost. Is that a job for a specialist, or do these kits in the store work?
Well, your system, 1990, is going to have the R12, which is the older Freon, that I don't even know if you can purchase it in the store anymore. We can buy it, but it's really getting expensive now.
Yeah.
Depending upon where the leaks are, would kind of dictate if you would change to the new Freon, which is the R134. But you do need to have someone take a look at it. It's the Freon, you know, some people are charging anywhere from $80 to $100 a pound for just the Freon. So to just put Freon in a system, you know, you might spend a couple hundred dollars or more.
Yeah.
So it gets very expensive.
Okay.
So I would have somebody take a look at it, but make sure that the leaks get repaired. You know, don't just keep putting Freon in.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks. So if you have a car, an air conditioning system that was designed to use the older Freon, can you put the new Freon in there, or are there some parts that have to be changed?
It varies from manufacturer to manufacturer. And some manufacturers you cannot convert because the compressor is not compatible with the new Freon. So it varies, but as a general rule, all of them can be converted. It's just a question of whether or not you want to spend the money to convert them.
Okay. So even if you have an older car, it's possible, but it might end up costing too much.
It's really becoming a complex question. I mean, we get asked it all the time. You know, should I convert? Should I not convert? And it's, to be honest, it's almost impossible to answer that question over the phone, because if the car has R12 and the only thing that's leaking is a series of O-rings, and it's got a capacity of 3 pounds of Freon, and there's 2 pounds still in the system, well, you know, that 2 pounds, that's, you know, maybe $160 just in Freon, and you only need $10 worth of O-rings, a little bit of labor, and maybe another pound of Freon. Well, that car is probably going to be worth keeping the R12, because the other thing that people are noticing when you convert is that it's not as efficient. The car, the actual outlet temperature coming out of the dash, the air temperature may be anywhere from 5 to 10 degrees warmer with the new Freon when you convert it, because the older systems, the size of the condenser, the size of the components isn't adequate for this Freon. So there are some trade-offs, and it's an individual question. If a car comes in and the compressor's leaking, or evaporator or condenser or any of the major components, then yes, then it definitely is worth converting.
Okay. We do at least one more here in Bloomington. Line one. Hello.
Hi. I've got that 88 Benz 300E. I got about 119,000 miles on it. The car runs perfectly in every way. Question I have is, there's a little bit of ticking that appears to be valve lifter related, and I can't even hear it, you know, if the blower is operating with either the heating or the air conditioning, even at low levels. And I guess my question to you is, these products that supposedly clean the valve lifters or lubricate them or whatever they do, do you believe in those? I've had people tell me, hey, that could make your car worse, and then I've had other people say, you should try this.
How often are you changing oil?
Change it every 3,000 miles or 3 months.
Oh, okay. Well, if it's not a real loud click.
And it isn't something that's markedly loud upon acceleration either.
Right. What's happening is the hydraulic lifter is bleeding down. And by bleeding down, it means that the little check ball in there is not sealing properly.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're hearing is clearance between the valve and the rocker.
That car would have self-adjusting valves, wouldn't it?
Yeah, they're hydraulic. You're correct.
Mm-hmm.
And
so,
as far as these additives are concerned, I've used them. I think most people have at some point or another. Most of the time, they don't work.
That's what I kind of felt. The risk of using them is minimal, though, huh?
Correct. But if you're changing your oil every 3,000 miles, I don't think that it's going to help.
Okay.
But, I mean, if you want to try it, you know, that's fine.
What about Slick 50 or one of the poly products?
It may make the system worse, the noise worse. It's a little thinner oil. Usually it's a case where you have to isolate which lifter it is and simply replace it.
Mm-hmm. Well, my view on this would be that unless that gets extremely loud, I mean, hopefully, you know, if I drive the thing 200,000 miles at least, it'll function normally between now and then.
It should.
And you're saying this kind of a lifter problem isn't something that's defeating for the engine if it's just a normal sound like that?
No.
Okay, because I've got another Benz with about 103,000 on it, and it doesn't make that sound.
Right. Yeah, most of the Mercedes, over time, experience that they just simply, you have to replace the lifter.
Uh-huh. You mean they just plain wear out or get too noisy?
Well, you cleaning or attempting to clean doesn't seem to work.
Oh, I see. Well, I had the same issue with Audis, is that they got very high mileage.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed like you could go on driving them, and
right.
The same noise was there, and it wasn't an issue in functioning.
No, it will not.
Okay, and I appreciate your comments on the complexity of those air conditioning decisions.
Yeah, it's kind of a tough, it's a tough decision to make.
Thank you so much for your help.
Very good. Well, there we will leave it with the promise that I know in a couple months Rick will come back and we'll do it again. So thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign.